Jeff Taylor, Director of Technology, and I can elaborate a little bit more on the school safety aspect of it. It was about this time last year that the school department, under the leadership of Superintendent Dan Brook, Assistant Superintendent McCaffrey, explored school safety and security, and we explored a number of different companies, and we were able to roll out, as Director McGrath said, a $1.5 million upgrade to security, which outlines cameras, access control, which are all the door swipes, as well as alarm systems. We're piloting a guest system that ties into that same technology. And we're also working in the developmental phases of a phone-based app that will supersede any technology of Rave and the Mutual Link. And it really is one of the only districts in the country working with this company that has integrated all those aspects of safety. It was the technology that was put into place after the Newtown, Connecticut school shooting. And so we explored all the technologies, and we're happy to say that as evidenced by that project, we are and always looking to improve, but we have put a lot of energy and resources into ensuring that our district is secure and safe. In addition to that, though,
Thank you very much. If we have additional questions, we're just talking on the budget stuff. So that's very good information, very important. I thank you. And sir, if you have additional questions.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Darlene Netco, Ward 7, lifelong resident of Warwick, homeowner, taxpayer, teacher of 32 years in the district, and I'm also president of the Warwick Teachers Union. Back in 2008, 2009, during the Great Recession, the state legislature passed a one-time only bill that allowed cities and towns to underfund the schools by up to 5% below the maintenance of effort. Warwick was the only city or town that cut the full 5% and never gave it back. So therefore, by anyone's estimate, how much money do you think Warwick Public Schools has lost in that time period? You know, if you figure at that time it was about $5 million, say 10 years, you're looking at $50 million our schools haven't had. During the same period of time, the city required the schools to pay the interest on the bond, the only city or town in the entire country to do that. That debt service on the bond was about $1.5 million, and then greater than that. And I don't remember the exact number of years that the school department had to pay that, but if you figure another 10 years or so, there's another $10 million, $15 million. During that period of time, there's been some talk about declining pupil population. The real decline happened from the 70s onward. However, the school department has shrunk. In 2016, the district consolidated secondary schools and cut employees, both teachers and WISE union members and other employees. In 2018, the school department had another consolidation, again, cut teaching staff and shrunk. At that time, our former superintendent declared that the district was right-sized. Therefore, when there's talk of declining population, the district has met that declining population with appropriate action. In the budget document that the city printed on page Roman numeral 7, it says, the bottom line is that Warwick Public Schools' revenue situation is in flux. Nevertheless, this budget proposes a 2.8% increase in local support to Warwick Public Schools, reflecting the compensation value of the negotiated teacher's contract, despite further declines in enrollment. All right, a couple of things there. The teachers are not the only employee group with a raise this year. And just to set the record straight, 2 years ago, we got a 0% increase. I mean, last year was zero. This year is a 2% increase. Next year is a 2.5. We're also paying more for our health care. When you figure everything together, it comes out to a 1.13% increase over 3 years. On page Roman numeral one, and not to knock anyone else in this city or anything else, but on page Roman numeral one, the mayor says that negotiated wage increases of between 2.75% and 3.75%, but well below the current inflation rate. Well, I would say our 1.13% is well below the current inflation rate. And I don't think it's right to blame or place all the onus on the fact that we negotiated a contract and get a raise, a very nominal raise next year. We're not the only employee group in the city or in the school department with a raise. So to be mentioned particularly in this budget document and to make it sound like the teachers are the cause for the school department needing money is wrong, especially since, as I already pointed out, the city has done a grave disservice to this school system over at least 10 years. And as the Beacon recently printed and Mr. Ricks pointed out earlier, back in 2005, the city tried to wrest $600,000 back from the schools. So I would say our city has been mistreating and underfunding the schools for quite some time. And I think even the percentage, even though the schools are getting over 50% of the property tax revenue, the schools used to get a lot more. So the schools have been making do with less. And I know this school committee and this superintendent would never cut sports in order to balance the budget. That was a previous superintendent who pulled that stunt. Anyway, I do appreciate that the mayor has put an increase into the school budget for this year. Our school department under a previous superintendent should have asked for more money last year and didn't. But I just wanted to, make those, maybe kind of set the record straight about where the schools are. And I appreciate all the talk here about unfunded mandates, too. Thanks to Mr. Howe for bringing that up and everybody else dovetailing on it, because that is huge when it comes to what our schools have to pay out before they look at anything else. Thank you.
Thank you. Good evening, sir.
Hello. Lower this a little bit. My name is Brian Hebert. I'm no longer a resident of Warwick, though I did live off of Tidewater for about 5 years. I do work in the green space, and that is from a green renewable space. And there's a number of things in this meeting that I hear, concerns about creative funding, hedging against inflation, transportation, and cost cutting. So I work in a number of verticals in the green space, and everybody immediately thinks solar, and yes, that is one of them. There are community solar farms that need off-takers. I do happen to represent one of them. There's a number that are out there. In Rhode Island, municipalities and schools and nonprofits can be off-takers. This is different than selecting your supply deregulation, okay? That is typically 3-year contracts. You have to bid for it, right? With community solar, you can save a flat 10% off of your utility costs. That's both your supply and your delivery combined. So if I hear that you have a budget of $138 million, and then you have an additional $40 million, and between $4.5 to $6 million of that is utility, probably about $2.5 million is your electric between water and gas. So that's $250,000 a year that the constituents of Warwick and yourself can find in savings. That's one of the verticals. Another vertical is I also have a partner that works with schools and municipalities that will show how you can do a complete energy audit for free. And they'll say, okay, if you do X, Y, and Z, that might be utility, gas, lighting, grounds, et cetera, then they'll say, okay, we will provide 20 to 25% savings. If it reaches, say, 20 or 22%, they have an insurance rider that they'll strike a check for the difference. Okay? So there's two timelines on this. The enrollment for community solar in Rhode Island is twice a year. The first one is by June 1st. So if your town enrolls, whether it be through me or somebody else, you can start seeing those credits July 1st because the cutoff is June 1st. If you wait, you will not see them until January of 2023. So I'm more than willing to have a further conversation in any of these. Again, it's strictly an enrollment. The program is 10% off. So there's not really a procurement process in that or an RFP. Whereas the other organization that I partner with, they act as a fiduciary and they run an RFP for you. And they would welcome any discovery call if that is an avenue that you want to go. All right. Thank you.
Are there any other questions from members of the public on the school budget?
I just have one question. In the 2016 Rhode Island report card, it showed the proficiency levels of all the schools, and Warwick showed proficiency levels in math, reading, and science at 32%, 16%, and 11%. And I'm sorry, reading was 32%, math was 16%, and science was 11%. I can't find what those percentages are now. Does anyone on the committee have those numbers, what our proficiency levels are now?
Mr. Cody, I can get those for you.
You can?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any more questions from members of the public on the school budget? All right. Thank you very much. Next up will be the animal shelter. Again, thank you to the administration and the school committee members for attending. Everybody, we are going to continue the budget hearings. Thank you very much. I'll give you a minute. I don't want to. Thank you very much. We're going to move on to the animal shelters budget. And Director, you have the tough job of going right after schools. We appreciate your patience here. Are there any questions from members of the City Council for the animal shelters budget, which can be found on page 24? Councilman Howe.
Mr. President, honestly, not a question, a statement. Every time I go to that shelter, honestly, it is something I have no problem, and I want the administration to hear this, no problem funding. I think they do an amazing job. I think that it's good to see how we as a city and the reputation we have as a city, the way we treat our animal, the pets, the city's pets or the abandoned pets. I have nothing but great things to say, so thank you. That's all.
Thank you, Councilman Howe. Any other questions for members of the council? Councilwoman Travis. Yes.
And are you fully staffed to just four people?
We are.
Are you? Okay. Every time you come to the budget, your budget is always nice and clean and basically no big fluffs or anything. You always do a great job. I wanted to make sure I mentioned that.
Any other questions for members of the council on the animal shelters budget? Any questions for members of the public on the animal shelters budget, which can be found on page 24? Any questions on the animal shelters budget? All right, Director, thank you very much. We appreciate your time. Next up is the police department. The police department's budget is on page 25. Good evening, Colonel.
Good evening, President.
Is that mic on, Colonel?
Good evening, Mr. President.
Thank you. I know the Colonel is stepping in today, and we appreciate you being here today. So, Colonel, one of the first questions we're asking the departments on your staffing. How does your staffing needs look, and where are you staff-wise this evening?
Sure. So on the sworn side, we currently have 8 vacancies. That would sound fairly promising, but it should be noted that even with the 8 vacancies, we still have other officers that are on the payrolls that aren't. We have other officers that are on the payroll that are not working. So, for instance, with our complement of 175, we're operating right now at 155 because we have the vacancies. We have 5 out sick. We have 1 on the job injury, 1 light duty, and 5 in training. So we are working on the 8 vacancies, and we look to hopefully be at full complement within the next 12 months. That being said, on the civilian side, our only vacancies are 2 dispatchers that we're currently seeking to hire, and also a part-time custodian. Other than that, all our positions are filled, and it should be noted that we did eliminate 2 positions for operators. That was a savings of $96,000.
Thank you, Colonel. And Colonel, when you bring on new recruits, new members, it's not usually a big class. It's usually 2 people here, 2 people there, correct?
So we're fortunate that the next academy class is going to have 7. But in this past fiscal year, we put on 7 lateral transfers, but they came in at 1s and 2s. And this academy we're about to graduate is 2 employees.
And that's part of the trend, and not just in the state of Rhode Island, but nationwide, that this is a very difficult job. It is very difficult to get good people that want to be in that position to do that job. So you find good people, they're almost free agents sometimes once their contract is up. So, you know, they can, they have the pick, you know. We were able to recruit because we have a great department. But, you know, you were able to bring people in that already have experience, that didn't have to go through the academy. They were already on a different department and stuff like that. But that's a trend, correct, Colonel, that it is very difficult to get people and to maintain and to keep great people.
That's correct. Recruitment and hiring is a challenge at this point, but we've been fortunate. There's a small number of candidates that 39 cities and towns are vying for, and we've been fortunate to get some very qualified in-state laterals and out-of-state lateral transfers.
Thank you, Colonel. Any questions from members of the council? Councilman Foley.
Thank you. Colonel, for lack of a better term, is there a social worker on staff?
That is correct. We do have, and that you will find that in line item 30-332. That's a mental health clinician that is a contracted employee from the Providence Center.
I'm sorry. 30, what was the last three numbers?
30-332. That's a $60,000 budgeted item for a mental health clinician through the Providence Center.
Now, are they on call 24/7 or they do regular shifts?
They work 9 to 5 or 40 hours a week. They do ride along with our patrol officers. We can call her when she's off duty, and she will respond in as needed.
And how long has she been on staff?
We have had been contracted with the Providence Center for, I would say, going on 6 years now. She's the second clinician that they've provided us.
And have you seen quantifiable benefits to that position?
Yes, I have. And please, I apologize for having my back to you.
No, not at all.
But just with this microphone. Yes, Councilman, we have seen it. She works hand in hand with our mental health crisis response team. And as everybody in this room is aware of, the mental health situation in the state and in the country, along with the opioid pandemic, has really taxed our officers. So having a mental health clinician that can ride along with officers, respond out to scenes, assist in de-escalating and diffusing situations, and also can be a direct conduit to getting folks that are in crisis the needed services.
And my last question for you, do you see any need in the near future to expand that to being more than one position?
I would say no at this point. The one that we have does an excellent job, and we continue to train more and more officers in mental health crisis response as well.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Any questions for members of the council? Councilman Sinapi.
Just mainly one for 3109 overtime. It's projected at $1.8 million for 2022, but for proposed, it's only $1.3 million. Why is that?
Well, we've done a good job in getting our officers back. I can say that we lost, our overtime budget was high because of COVID. That was one of the aggregating factors. One of the other aggravating factors was the fact that we actually had two officer-involved shootings, and which placed half a dozen officers out of service off the road for nearly 2 months. And we also, like I said, we were operating with 15% shortage. We were only operating at 150 officers. So getting officers back to work, retiring officers that had been out long-term sickness, and getting recruits on the road, we believe we're going to be able to keep that overtime down. The 1.8 projection is, if you know the history of our department, is pretty much an anomaly. We don't typically go that high.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Travis.
Okay. Hi, Colonel. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I got line number 3113, holiday reimbursement. It seems like there's a big increase there.
Yes. So one thing that in talking with finance, if you look at the 2022 budget, that is not reflective of the 2.75% raise that was achieved in 2022. So when you look at the increase, what you're seeing is actually a 6.5% increase with the combination of the 2.75 from 22 and then the 3.75 for fiscal year 23.
Okay, yeah. All right, Steve. Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I was still thinking about the answer to that last question. But we'll jump around here. Hi, Chief.
Good evening.
All right. Service contracts.
Yes.
I think it's 100K. That's 3340. You want to just talk about the delta there?
Yep. So we did have some interesting changes to that service contract code. So we have our DTS computer software. Director Carlucci mentioned that. That was a software that we went from Benchmark to DTS. In years past, when we presented that to council, that's a $25,000 fee. We budgeted that on a special details capital outlay and advised the council on upon purchase that we would be moving that to $33.40. That's one of the increases. The other increase was our TASER program. Currently, right now, we have $56,000 budgeted for TASER. As you know, the TASER program is crucial to de-escalation. I don't have to point far to, you know, an incident at police headquarters that began as a shooting and ending at a TASER deployment. We originally, in years past, used asset forfeiture money for that, or grant money, and or grant money. This year, we've moved that into service contracts. There is a slight chance that if we go to body-worn cameras and we use the same vendor, which is Axon, there's a chance that that $56,000 may be reduced slightly. Now, those are some of the big additions to service contract. The other one is $30,000 that we budgeted for copy machines. Our copy machines, three of them are 10 years old and have been out of lease for 5 years. The other one is 7 years old. And we anticipate that if we were to buy two, it would cost us anywhere from $20,000 to $30,000. That originally had been budgeted through MIS. However, it was taken out of the MIS budget and given to the separate departments. So that's where we realized the delta on that.
Okay. All right. Thank you for the detail on that. Telephone's up 50K from the last year budget, and about 30 from about 50 from the projection for this year. And that's 3303.
Yeah, here we go. That is showing the drastic increase with the amount of money that we're paying for Verizon Copper. We hope to solve that problem with the new radio system that you guys approved. But as we know, we're still ordering parts and waiting for them to come in. So
got
we
it.
May see most of this fiscal year soaking up that.
Okay, great. Thank you for that. Next, uniforms.
Yes.
Which is, I don't know, somewhere. That was a $100,000 increase, I believe, my notes say.
Yep. Yes, that's correct. And that revolves around hiring. That's a small portion of the increase. The made portion of the increase, which is roughly about $100,000, is for bulletproof vests due to the number of people that officers that need new vests. It should be noted that we will receive 50% of that vest money back through federal grants. But we still have to pay up front, which is why we put that in the budget.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Let's see any other big ones. Dispatch overtime. I think it was a $50,000 increase in that budget. Was that just based on your run rate? Or, I mean, it does look up this year. It was budgeted 150 in 22, budgeted 200 this year, and looks like it's going to finish about double the 22 budget for this year.
Yes, that's, again, probably the same reasons COVID. You can imagine 5 people or actually 16 people working in the same room on different shifts, 4 at a time. So COVID wiped us out last year. So we figure that's an anomaly, and we've really done a lot to improve our vacancies. So right now we're with 16 budgeted full-time employees. We currently have just 2 openings, but 2 are still in training. So we're still really working with 12.
Okay. Thanks, Chief. I'm just going to jump over to the personnel supplement. A couple things to look at. So on page... on page 19, data entry transcriptionist. Last year's it was budgeted $106,000 for 2 positions. This year, it's budgeted at $50,000 for two positions. Any chance that's a typo, or was there a meaningful change in those roles?
One minute, sir.
Yeah, take your time.
It looks like something got lost in translation.
Okay.
And there are two positions, so you can double that.
Okay, got it. All right. Okay, so that'll have to get reflected in the bottom line, obviously. Yeah. Okay. Along those same lines, this is just semantics, but or maybe not. On the total line, the number of positions on police civilians on page 19, it doesn't total up to the number here. It adds up to 25, but it says 27 at the bottom. And I think it's those two switchboard positions that were eliminated. But anyways, just for what it's worth, I noticed the discrepancy there.
Noted.
The last one to bring up is there's a large increase for building custodian. Year over year, it was like 13% increase. And I've noticed this in some other departments, and mostly it seems to be attributed to hitting that 18-month probationary period, but just wanted to verify that.
Yeah, that's the only, other than the 2.75% raise, no step increases were allowed this fiscal year. So it would have been their grade having been their first, 6 months, 12 months.
Based on the longevity.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for that. And I believe that's all I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman.
Thank you, Mr. President. Chief, sorry you drew the short straw on this. Unfortunate. Colonel, on page 20, we have police officer first class, police officer second class, police officer third class. I don't know if this perhaps might be a typo. I'm assuming a second class police officer makes more than a third class, but what's showing in the personnel supplement is 18 positions for a total of $668,335. And if I've got the math right, that comes out to $38,129 per officer. Third class is 11 officers for $537,000, and that works out to $48,827, if my math is accurate. Is that correct? And then on a probationary officer, it's got 17 at $1,405,799, and that comes out to
What was the last one you said?
It was probationary officer. There's 17, and it's $1,405,799, and I come up with $82,694, if my numbers are accurate.
Dan to be on. Dan.
It seems like some of these numbers may have been misaligned.
Yeah, that is probably correct. I don't have an answer for you right now. I'd have to sit down with my payroll clerk and try to map it.
Okay. Yeah, you need to check that out because it doesn't sound accurate to me, right? So a second class officer wouldn't be making less than.
No, you're right. I can even go back tonight and I can run the report showing the different classes too. Okay. I have it on the computer. I just don't have it in my notes.
So at this point, I'm going to assume that the budget of $16,900,000 is accurate, but somewhere along the line is there some confusion in the classification salaries of those officers. So, Chief,
I would agree with you, and I actually have the spreadsheet with every single officer and what they make and what class they're in. And I can even show you, I can show the dollar amount. I just, with Excel, I can just make sure I categorize them differently so you can see it.
Okay.
To verify the number of positions. The total allowance, though, based on my spreadsheet, is correct what you have with the $15,400,407. The only thing I would say on the personnel supplement, my overtime budget was cut. Mr. Schaefer, to thank for that. But that was cut by $200,000. It is reflected in my overall budget. However, if you look on page 20, you'll see $1.5 million in overtime. That should read $1.3 million in overtime, which means that total that you just referred to would be $16,700,406, not $16,900,406.
Okay, so there'll be a couple of corrections that will need to be made on this. So, Chief, you said that as of now, you're at full complement of 175?
No, I am not.
I'm sorry. No,
yeah.
Let me retract that. Your capacity is 175.
Yes,
you're
sir.
Somewhere around 155. Over the years.
Well, no, I'm not. So I'm at 167.
Okay,
so I'm paying for 167. I'm working with 155.
Working with 155.
Correct.
Okay, so you're paying 167. Okay, so my point is that, once again, you know, you're coming before the council with less than a full complement. And I seem to recall over the years, you have come to us on several occasions where you're less than full complement. Before you became colonel, right? That's kind of like
I don't think we've seen 175 in close to two decades.
I don't recall you getting to that number. Have in the last 10 years, if you can kind of run that through your head real quick, has the police department ever come in over budget?
No.
I don't recall.
We're going to be close this year with our overtime, but I don't think we'll be over budget.
I don't think so. I don't seem to recall the police department ever coming in over budget with less than a full capacity on top of everything else. Some of the questions I have, I think Councilman Gebhardt touched on it, but I have some different numbers. So on item 30-127, salaries dispatchers, I'm showing a projection of 737 for this year and a proposed budget of 904 for next year. What would that, well, roughly $67,000 increase be for?
Be based on the raise?
Just the contract.
5.5% raise plus it which span 2 years. And
right.
Then it would also be the number of dispatchers that we anticipate having.
Okay. So it's contract.
If we knew it, yeah.
Okay. On item 3220, you've increased your proposed budget for gasoline to 540,000, 140,000 over this year. Not disputing that, yeah. Given, you know, the climate that we have out there. I believe that's about a 35% increase, and I'm not disputing that. My question relates to the credit, where it's item 3900, interdepartment credit for gas of 40,000, which is an 18% increase over year-end projection. Is there a reason why there's a difference between the increased cost of your gasoline budget versus the credit that's going to be issued?
Are you referring to 3980?
Yes, 3900. Interdepartment.
2 minutes, Councilman.
Interdepartment credits for gas.
Oh, okay.
Your projection for this year is 22,000. Your proposed budget is 40,000. That's an increase of 18% versus the increase of your fuel cost of 35%.
Yeah, I didn't look at the different percentages. We just went off the amounts that we back charged in previous years and added more for this year because next year because of the price increase.
Right, which is my point.
Yeah.
So if the price is going up to you guys 35%, why isn't the credit being issued for interdepartmental credits the same? Because it's not. It's about half as much.
Fair point.
Okay. Supplies for the target range, 3236. That's going from 85,000 to 126,000. Is this all related to the increased cost of ammunition?
That's correct. And just for some comparisons, a case of practice ammo in 2020, 1,000 rounds was $211. The price is now $460. So that's more than doubled. And the price for duty ammo used to be $294 per case. We're now paying $850 per case. And I'm told that the specialty ammo, the 5.56, the 308 and rounds for our marksman team, when I asked the price of it, they said it was prohibitively expensive. And to put that into reference, the duty rounds that officers carry on the road, one bullet is $1.70. So, I mean, the price is just, I have a breakdown for how much ammunition we use. We did our due diligence this year. As you know, we transferred money and bought ammo at a cheaper rate. But even the stuff that we purchased with fiscal year 23 money, it's going to take anywhere from 15 to 18 months to show up. So we're kind of in a jam with everybody else.
And I agree with you completely on that, Colonel. I've made the calls concur with you completely on the cost of ammo. It's ridiculous. Targets are not cheap anymore either. Thank you. That's the only questions I have.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Councilman. Any other questions? Councilman Howe.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just very quickly, good evening, Colonel. We had a constituent outreach on the budget, and I spoke, and one of the constituents made this request concerning the VIN operations and the hours. Is it economically feasible? Well, first, let me ask you this. What are the regular hours of the VIN inspection station?
We run the VIN detail Tuesdays for 4 hours and Saturdays for 4 hours.
Okay. Would it be feasible or possible to extend those hours to other days than Tuesday and Saturday?
The challenge,
is it a revenue loss position is what I should ask?
Sure. So we do make a fair amount of money on that VIN. I know that's not what that detail's for. We would lose some of our proceeds by doing that. We would also have some challenges staffing the detail.
Okay.
We're having a tough time filling road jobs. And as you know, that the VIN detail is at civic rate. So it's a less of a price. So when officers have a choice whether or not to do VINs or to work a road job at more money, they tend to take the road jobs.
Understood. And so it's only available to officers, not to, please pardon my not knowing the proper position, but like, let's say the retired officers who are part of details.
So there's some NCIC certifications that you have to maintain, which our retired officer corps does not maintain. However, we are in the process of working with Council 94 and the FOP to allow certain civilian employees from the police department that have NCIC access to be able to work that detail. There's a couple of hiccups, but we're trying to get some, you know, do some negotiating to get that process in play.
Thank you so much, Colonel. And I just wanted to also add on that all the rest of the comments were very positive about your department and the professionalism of the department. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilman.
Any other questions for members of the council? Any questions for members of the public on the police budget? It starts on page 25.
Good evening. You know, I've been coming to budget hearings for a very, very long time. And the one thing where there's continuity is within the police department. They always seem to do more with less. It's been like that since I've been paying attention to the city. And so I'd like to say thank you again to this colonel and the colonels before him for doing a great job and keeping us safe. I do have a couple of questions. Maybe you guys can clarify it. I'm not sure if Brad, either yourself or Mr. Schaefer, I'm just trying to reconcile some numbers here. I have the fiscal note from the latest contract with the projections in salaries, and they are conflicting with the projections and salaries in the budget, both 2022 and 2023. So the fiscal note with the 2.75% raise in fiscal year 2022, your fiscal note shows a salary with the increase of $14,504,324, but yet in your budget that we're speaking about tonight, the number that you reflect is $13,854,916. So there's a difference of $649,408. So I'm assuming that when you produce the fiscal note of the contract impact, that you use the same numbers when you produce the budget. So I'm wondering, how is there a $650,000 difference in the projection of salaries?
I mean, first of all, you have to look at page 51 in concert with this, which is we had budgeted $800,000
in page 51?
Page 51. For city contractual obligations, which was an estimate of $400,000 for municipal workers and $400,000 for police. And they've got enough vacancies, so they're not running a deficit, so we're not going to move that money over there. I think that's the biggest part of the explanation. But
this is just a line item of salaries.
Yes, it's in on page 51, $400,000 of that.
What number on page 51, Peter?
Code 75198, city contractual obligations. There's an $800,000 item in there. $400,000 of it was to offset whatever was agreed to in the police negotiations. It has not been transferred over, so it's not in their base. It's over here. We don't need to transfer it because they've got enough vacancies that they're not going to run a deficit.
So you're saying there's $400,000 from this line item?
Yes.
Okay, so that leaves $249,000 difference in your figures. How do we reconcile that?
You've got to ask the question again. I really am.
I can't hardly hear you.
I'm having a hard time hearing in this room. I didn't.
Neither one of you can hear each other.
You can't hear me.
Well, I'm half deaf, so that's my problem.
You're going to have to ask the question again because I did not hear your. I did not hear the details of your question.
So, with what you've just said, as far as this $400,000 allotment that gets transferred, that still leaves a discrepancy of $249,408 from your projections. So, what I'm getting at is your fiscal note for your contract, the projections that you made there based on salaries versus the projection based on salaries in the budget, the two different numbers, and they vary in 2022 by $649,408 and in 2023 expected budget, $352,000. So in 2023, you're showing $15,048,000. But in this budget for fiscal year 23, you're showing $15,400 and change. So I just don't understand where that difference is when you're using the same set of numbers just on two different pieces of paper.
I mean, the projection in 22, the 13
Mike, million, you're talking to the mic.
The $13,854,000, the projection for 22. Was based upon monitoring payrolls over a period of time and projecting it to the rest of the year. They've got a lot of vacancies.
They've got vacancies.
He talked about the vacancies. There's eight vacancies right now. But when I did the fiscal note, we're assuming essentially a full complement. I think there may have been some discounting in the fiscal note, which I haven't looked at in some time. But
so, will those vacancies be filled this fiscal year?
It's a moving target. We're going to attempt to. But if somebody retired, we have two pending retirements over the next couple of months. So that'll negate two hires. So it's very difficult. So when we figure out our 2023 personnel supplement, we do it to the person when they're here, which includes splits. So essentially, if somebody does 3 months as a probationary officer and then they move to third class, then it's calculated to the week based on the rank that they're at. Yeah. We cannot determine who's going to get promoted and who's going to move. We can't determine if a major is going to move. So to be able to hit that magic number of 15.4 is almost impossible. What we do for the vacancies is we budget a probationary officer, but that's at the absolute lowest rate.
Makes sense.
Last year, for instance, when you compare the 2023 supplement, we have six probationary officers listed. Last year, we had over 10 just because we were so short-staffed. So.
So the other question I had is, in years past, when I've received the fiscal notes, which, by the way, they're typically online with the tentative contracts, but for some reason, this contract and the DPW, the fiscal notes were not online, but traditionally they are. So if you looked at the latest couple fiscal notes, 73-15 and 63-12A, they actually included in those fiscal notes the impact to the contract, what impact it had on the retirees. And that number was also included in the fiscal note. So if I'm correct in assuming when the active employees get the raise, the retirees also get a percentage of the raise too, correct?
Well, you're talking about the retirees in terms of a COLA?
Because
there's no linkage to the COLA any longer.
Retirees do not get a COLA?
Not for the...
So if the department gets a raise,
the very old retirees that are in Police One still get a COLA based upon the compensation increase, but that's part of the actuarial study. He's making an assumption as to what the COLAs are. It wouldn't be any change in our appropriation for the.
Well, from what I understand, whatever the police get in active, the retirees get the same.
No. That's not correct at all. No,
there's a few older employees who retired before 1980 or something like that.
Yeah, that's Pension One.
They get the same.
Pension One, they get a, I want to say it's 75% of the average, the national average. Pension two is still the standard 3%.
Okay, so it's safe to say that when they do get the raise of the contract, there is an impact to the retirees as well, correct?
Only for the older employees, but the actuary is already assuming that everyone's going to be getting an increase. I think their assumption is even higher than, it's at least 3% that they're assuming. So, and it, they capture the gains or losses every time they do another study.
So you don't carry that?
They wouldn't change their number based upon one contract.
You don't carry that number in your fiscal note? That, is that carried somewhere else? Is that carried in benefits or OPEB?
I wouldn't have done that because I know how the actuary does it. The actuary is looking at the pay increases that the people whose COLA are affected, which is a limited number of police officers. It's more firefight. There are more firefighters, but very few police officers left where the COLA is affected by the pay raise of the employee. And the actuary is already making an assumption on that.
Okay, so that dollar amount's not carried in your fiscal note, and it's not carried in the budget for your salaries. That's carried in, where is that carried in the budget? Is that carried under OPEB?
It's carried in on the pension page, which is near the end of the 50-something or other.
Is that 61?
Page 54 is the appropriations for the different police, fire, and municipal employees.
Mr. Cody, you have 2 minutes.
And those contributions are based upon actuarial assumptions on pay increases every year.
Okay. Thanks. Thanks, Brad.
Are there any more questions from members of the public on the police budget? Any more questions from members of the public on the police budget? Okay, next up is organized crime and drug enforcement. I believe this is the colonel as well.
Yes, so 31, 32, and 33. Organized crime and drug enforcement, alcohol and highway safety enforcement, and police grants. This is, these are three budget codes that align with our partnerships with state and federal agency. So for instance, 31-101, that is our relationship with Homeland Security Investigations. 31-106 is the Department of, DEA, and 31-109 is Joint Terrorism Task Force. This is money that these partnerships have given us so that we can assist their investigations by providing them with a detective. This is not budgeted city funds. On the budget code,
We go one at a time.
Okay.
Is there any questions on the organized crime and drug enforcement? These is on page 27 of the budget from members of the council. Any members of the public have any questions on the organized crime and drug enforcement budget? Okay, hearing none, we will move to the alcohol and highway safety enforcement. Again, Colonel, same.
Yep. These same are thing. NHTSA funds that are directed to us through the Rhode Island Department of Transportation Office on Highway Safety, and we anticipate about $220,000.
Okay. Any questions for members of the council on alcohol and highway safety enforcement? Members of the council. Any members of the public have any questions on the alcohol and highway safety enforcement budget? Again, same page, page 27. Okay, next up also is the colonel, is police grants.
This reflects HOPE Initiative, our SOLM, which is our sex offender check group, and also our tobacco compliance. And we don't anticipate any changes.
Thank you. Any questions from members of the council on police grants? Questions from members of the council? Any members of the public have any questions on police grants? Members of the public, any questions on police grants?